Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time. Coming to you from nowhere, a suburb of parts unknown. Join Stefan and Lance, the Misters of the Dark, as they review all things horror with their latest victim. I mean guest. New episodes of Misters of the Dark drop Mondays on the Fearscape Media Network.
Welcome, everybody, for this new episode of Unsensitive, a show where we take a subject, talk with an expert, and break it down with questions that are normally a little bit in too polite to ask, but we ask them anyway. So I am your host, Ray Robinson, and today we'll be looking at the subject of Black Lives Matter. And today we'll be talking with Chris Black. Chris, tell us a little bit more about yourself before we begin.
I am a writer for the page, stage, and screen. Mm-hmm. I've written short films and plays that have been produced around the globe, been featured in some magazines, won a fiction award. So basically anything that has to do with telling stories in some regard is what I do.
All right, wonderful. So let's kind of just launch right into it right away here with Black Lives Matter. Just the name itself tends to set people off at times. And one of the reasons I think that is because there's a lot of folks that say, well, all lives matter. Right. Doesn't that cover Black lives? What is your thoughts on that in particular?
I think that it does cover all lives. I don't think anyone's ever said no lives at all matter. I've never heard that. I've never heard someone say white lives don't matter, Latino lives don't matter. Black Lives Matter is specifically that because that is specifically the issue that is going on right now. It is the police brutality, the police killings, the racism and discrimination and inequality, specifically in regards to Black people, African-American people, people of African descent in America. So it's not excluding everybody else. It's just saying this is the issue right now. These are the people affected by these issues right now who have been affected by these issues for a long time. So that's why it's very zoomed in. But yeah, all lives matter, but all lives aren't being killed right now.
Okay. That makes it a little clearer, I think. Now, from what I understand, what I've read up on, Black Lives Matter kind of itself as an organization is, for lack of a better term, leaderless. Right. And I don't really know much about the history of BLM other than it kind of cropped up after some very, very public murders. I think Trayvon Martin being one of them.
Yeah.
It's a movement such as Black Lives Matter. Is it important to realize that there isn't an infrastructure there, or is there one we just can't see from the outside looking in?
Well, there definitely are founders, and there definitely are people who are over state kind of chapters of it, I guess you could say. But I feel like it's not a cult. Like, a leader is something that if it was contained, you would expect. But this is like all 50 states, every country. You can't have one leader controlling that, and you also can't hold one individual responsible for that. So I feel like, and mostly the people who are associated with Black Lives Matter are not the people who need a leader. They're the ones who organize their own protests and marches and demonstrations themselves. And, you know, it's controlled, but it's not in a bubble. It's not in a bottle. If you want to do something that represents Black Lives Matter, you can do it. If you want to make a shirt about it, you can make a shirt about it.
Okay. Now, to get a little bit more clarification on BLM. Is it or is it not an anti-police movement?
It's an anti-police brutality movement. If the police stopped killing Black people, stopped shooting Black people in the back seven times, no one would have a problem with the police. This is specifically about this long, deep-rooted, bloody history of police officers of all races, honestly, asserting their power inappropriately and then getting away with it. So it's not anti-police. There have been police officers who have marched with the protesters. It is not at all saying police are evil. It is saying there are bad seeds. Like there's bad seeds in everything, but most of the time those people get punished. With when it comes to police officers, they don't typically get punished. They typically claim self-defense or resort to digging up someone's past, and they usually get off or get transferred or something.
Now, the Black Lives Matter movement, there's a lot of folks that also say, well, why are you not focusing on Black on Black crime? You would think that that would be just as important for Black Lives That Matter. Is there a reason why that became an issue?
Well, I mean, I think it's definitely something that needs to be talked about because Black on Black crime is a thing, and it's a very bad thing, and it's a very, you know, it's a thing that happens very often in our communities. And so it needs to be addressed. I absolutely believe that it needs to be addressed, but I think it needs to be addressed on its own. I think, again, Black Lives Matter is for police brutality, is for kind of an unequal system. Black on Black crime, for one, most of the time, those people end up in jail eventually, which goes into a whole other conversation about mass incarceration. But there's no shortage of Black criminals in prison and in jail who get arrested and get their sentence very quick. Whereas, again, with these police officers, it is not a speedy process. I mean, you know, Breonna Taylor, since we're, you know, in Louisville, Breonna Taylor is someone who was killed in March. It is now September. And yeah, I think they just got the ballistics from the FBI. It has moved so slow. I know George Floyd was also very early in the year, and Ahmaud Arbery, I think, was in February. And they really, not even those have had resolve. And so I think Black on Black crime, I think the police handle that pretty well in the Black communities and take those people away. And if they're killing people, they should be. But, you know, this is more of a focused movement, focusing on people who don't get punished for their crimes.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a little bit more sense. One of the things that I'll kind of dig a little bit deeper into some of the things that I hear from, for lack of a better term, the white community, right, and questions that they would have, concerns, maybe even one could say a slanted point of view, because I'm guessing probably it's really safe to say, just from my conversations, is that as a white person, you're never really going to know the depth of how a Black person has been treated over the years. Do you think that's a fair statement, or do you think that's too exclusionary?
No, I mean, you can't understand a Black experience. This is, just like I can't understand a white experience. I mean, it's mutual, and I can't try to. It's like I can't speak about, you know, being a Syrian refugee. I cannot connect with someone telling their story about that. I cannot intrude and push myself into that narrative. So I think that there's, you know, you have to understand that this is not a 2020 thing where you can be like, I showed up to it, I'm a part of it. This is a very, you know, it's very deep rooted and very historical problem. I mean, before the police existed, Black lives were being abused and mistreated and unequal in society. You know, we weren't even considered people when the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were signed. We were not we the people. We were not all men that were created equally. We were property. So we've always been mistreated. You cannot understand that. And that's just the truth. That's not, you know, an anti-white statement. That's not saying you should understand it. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody. You know, because that's a painful past, but you connect with what you can connect with. I think that you can have empathy. I think that you can say, let me take a step back and let me evaluate myself. I think you can focus yourself into it that way. Let me educate myself. Let me question myself and my decisions when it comes to this subject. But you cannot say, you know, you cannot try to insert yourself into it.
Okay. And actually, that kind of goes into a deeper question in regards to this year in particular, with a lot of the protests that have cropped up since the violence has come up. There has been probably a larger, more diverse crowd fighting for Black Lives Matter this year over any other year that that I've been kind of paying attention. So you basically, you have white people, you have Black people, you have Hispanic people all marching and looking for these changes in what they see as systemic racism within the system. Is there, and this one might come out of left field for you too, just because it came right off the top of my head, yeah. Really. Is there anything that a white person should be doing at these marches that they aren't doing, and vice versa? Is there anything that they are doing that is stepping on the Black Lives Matter's toes and making things worse?
I would say one thing personally, being a relatively young person, that I've seen is kind of the effect it's had on social media, mm-hmm. More than anything. And I feel like some people, and not just white people, there are many people who use trends just to, one, either not look racist, so they'll post something or they'll go somewhere and they'll take a selfie and they'll say, I went to a protest, you know, hashtag Black Lives Matter. And that's only so that their, you know, quote unquote, Black friends don't get on them and ask why they didn't post anything. And then there are those who feel the need to use their voice in a way that they don't need to. They feel the need to, you know, step over the line of being an ally to becoming, you know, making themselves into a savior. That's a word that's been thrown around a lot, a white savior.
Okay.
And trying to kind of, again, insert themselves into the narrative and kind of be, you know, their Black friend's defender. We don't need you to defend us. We don't need you to state our history for us. I've seen so many things on Facebook about white people giving dissertations about the slave experience and the civil rights experience. And it's like, okay, I'm glad like you listened to a podcast. I'm glad you listened to 1619 and you feel good about yourself. But, you know, let the Black voices shine through. Let, you know, because just like Black Lives Matter, Black voices matter. And if our voices are not the ones represented on the news, in the media, then it kind of gives a strange look to the whole thing. If all you see on the front line are white people, when you know there's not, that's not the only thing that's going on, but it makes it much easier for the people against it to make their own comments and assumptions about it. So, you know, be there, be an ally, but be that, and be an ally in a respectful way, and be an ally in a way that doesn't step on anybody's toes or push anyone into the background. You can be an ally and still shut up.
Perfect. Okay, that's good to know. And kind of talking along the lines of an ally, I've heard issues come up when somebody says, well, I don't see color, so therefore I'm not a racist.
Right.
Would that be a fair statement for a white person to say?
No, that makes them a liar. They're lying.
Please elaborate, just for my friends that have said that.
Because it's impossible. Unless you're colorblind or completely blind or legally blind, that's the only excuse I'd accept. Other than that, you do see color. I see color. Mm-hmm. You see color. I'm looking at you, and the first thing I see is you are a white man. I don't say it out loud. I don't point at you and say, oh my God, a white man. Just like when I came on, you didn't say, oh my God, a Black man. But you noticed it. You recognized that I was a different color than you. And I mean, that's not a taboo thing to think about. That is natural. When we're kids, it's natural to wonder why other people are different colors than us. That's why we ask questions. That's why we sometimes ask inappropriate questions to our friends about where are you from? What are you? Because you look different than me. It's natural to see color. That's why we give kids crayons. It is natural to see color. That's something that happens. So for anyone who says, I don't see color, that makes me think they really see color and that they just don't want to admit it. I would much rather you say, I do see color and I don't care. That would be the appropriate statement. Is to say, I know you're black. I know, you know, I know your skin is a different tone than mine, but I don't care. And I still respect it either way. But saying I don't see color is honestly, I don't know. I didn't ask what language I can use on this show.
It's cool. You can say whatever.
This is a crock of shit. It's
go for it. Absolutely. conversely, on that same topic, if somebody says, I don't see color, I've heard black folks say, well, you're erasing my blackness by saying it that way. Is that a fair statement too?
I do think so, because again, our skin comes with history in itself. So I think that's a completely fair statement to feel, because some people, their pride comes from their skin. Because in a lot of ways, people with brown skin, whether that be African Americans or whether that be Latinos too and Hispanics as well, our skin comes with history and our skin comes with a fight that continues every day, and our skin comes with, you know, taking caution with things that you don't have to. So living in our skin is a battle every single day. And, you know, every day we make it through a day, and every day that we achieve or succeed something, it is empowering to ourselves because we have broken through an invisible barrier. From the day someone of color is born, and I'm speaking on a wide spectrum, just out of respect, anytime a person of color is born, 1,000 walls are set up in front of them and they have to break through them or cross them or sidestep them or figure out a way to, you know, dig a hole underneath them just to get by. You know, one of the things that I'm sure most people of color heard in school when they were growing up was you have to work 2 to 3 times harder than anyone else in your class just to be satisfactory, just to be noticed. Like, you have to go above and beyond. You have to be extra because they don't expect anything from you. You know, just, again, based on the fact that they see color. You can be, you know, the son of an NFL player living in a $5 million mansion in the Hollywood Hills, but when you go to school, you are black still, and people still expect less and don't expect you to have the same mindset as other people. I saw a report, I can't think about what Ivy League school it was, but it was about how you, if you're a black woman and you're in pain, you shouldn't go to the doctor alone. You should go with a white friend, because it's this theory, this insane theory that goes all the way back to the days of slavery, that black people have a tolerance for pain, a better tolerance for pain, because we have been exposed to so much pain in the past. So doctors are more likely to send you to the back of the line and get to you last because they think that we can handle pain better, which is ridiculous that in 2020, that's still an opinion that medical professionals believe. And it kind of makes me question what they teach in medical school. But yeah, so we come with our own history. We come with our own pain, but we also come with our own pride. And so I feel like if someone feels like you're erasing their blackness, that's their way of saying you are erasing everything I did to get to this point to survive. So I think it's completely legitimate in that sense.
Okay. So, it's a good point of view. I never would have thought that way. So that's good. I actually learned something right there. I'm going to ask one more big question, the one that always seems to come up whenever I run across white friends that are viewing the Black Lives Matter movement from the outside looking in. And that's a lot of the protests have devolved somewhat into riots and looting. So is there, is that generally what, let me see if I can figure out how to word this correctly. Is that something that is condoned by Black Lives Matter? Is it encouraged, or is it outside influences that are doing that, or is it a combination of both?
I think that it's a combination of both. I think that most of the time, I say 95% of the time, it is agitators from the outside who come in and break the windows and cause trouble and turn a protest into a riot and loot and all that stuff. But I've also seen a side of the argument that is, this is our way of being seen. This is our way of being heard. If we walk down the street singing Kumbaya, no one's going to take us seriously because, you know, they're going to see just a bunch of people walking down the street. We have to make our voices heard by any means necessary. And if that means, you know, doing something to a target, that's what it means. If that means, you know, playing music loudly and standing on top of, you know, their car, that's what it means. Anything to be seen, noticed, and to maintain attention onto them. Because, you know, one of the things that's important to state is this is not a moment. This is not a thing. I've seen that a lot of people saying, oh my God, why are they killing Black people all of a sudden? And it's like, okay, Becky, like, wake up. Like, this isn't a new problem. This is every single year, basically, since I can remember, since middle school, someone is killed, people go out on the street, they riot for 2 weeks, or they protest for 2 weeks, rather. Nothing happens to the suspect or the police officer or whatever. And then it kind of quiets down and we go back to our average everyday lives until, you know, it happens again. And I think, you know, one of the things about the time we're in is that it seemed to happen back to back to back, even though it didn't. Even though Ahmaud Arbery was in February and Breonna Taylor was in March and there wasn't much publicity about those cases then, what happened is that we all kind of went into quarantine and we all kind of went into a mode in which we had nothing to do but read the news and nothing to do but scroll our news feeds all day. And suddenly these stories are read and heard about and questioned by people. You know, I always say there's the Tiger King stage of quarantine, which was that real beginning chunk, that February through March, when we thought, oh, we'll be out of this by July. And then there is, you know, kind of the awakening, as I guess you can call it, which is people saying, hold up, something's not right. These two things happened and they just don't add up. You know, just a guy jogging down the street and then a pickup truck, you know, blocks him and someone shoots him. It doesn't make sense. Someone being shot, you know, all those times with a no-knock warrant is questionable. It doesn't really make sense. And there's no really a way to defend those actions. And so I think that people had the time to read about it, to learn about it, to sustain it, and then stick with it. Because it still kind of happened. We're still kind of in our self-contained moment of 2020 where honestly, all hell could break loose and it wouldn't shock anybody. And so people have time to be consistent now. People have time to keep the conversation going. People aren't focused about their everyday lives. Now, I'm not saying that's everybody, because you do have those people who posted about it for a month and then they went back to taking pictures of their cheesecakes. And, you know, and that's what they do. And they took advantage of that moment. They made their statement, then they moved on. But I will say that the attention on it should continue as it has. And I think one of the main reasons it has continued and one of the main reasons that people are getting louder with it and maybe more, showy with it. And maybe even more destructive and disruptive with it is because it's still continuing to happen. I mean, we saw Jacob Blake very recently get shot in the back 7 times on camera. And I mean, that is kind of a huge middle finger from police when they know they're being filmed, they know what's going on. in society right now, and they still decide to shoot someone seven times in the back while the world is watching. I mean, that's not brave, that's just careless. And so I think a lot of it, again, is outside people coming in and trying to start something and trying to, you know, steal an iPhone and make their own thing out of it. But sometimes you got to be heard, like, because we've tried quiet, and quiet got us a few steps ahead, but it didn't stop the biggest issues. So, you know, peaceful and quiet and militant got us the right to vote, okay? It got us, you know, we can sit in the front of the bus, great, awesome. But it has not stopped killing us. I would much rather sit in the back of the bus rather than die. I think that, you know, those are two very uneven scales. And you have to remember, even the fight to end slavery, we had to fight a war. And it was like the bloodiest casualty-filled war in history. But we had to do it. That violence had to be done. It had to have attention on it. I think it's two sides to the same coin. I think there's definitely bad apples, but I also think it's people who are like, see me, notice I am angry, I am pissed off. If you want your businesses to be safe, if you want your streets to be safe, do something about it. You know, if you know, they arrest all the police officers tonight in the Breonna Taylor case, I guarantee you the streets would clear out. It wouldn't be going on anymore, because we would be like, they heard us, it happened. We have to continue to do this in bigger numbers from different locations, because nothing is being done.
Chris, thank you so much for taking some time and really showing a point of view to somebody like myself that things I hadn't considered before that really needed to get a little bit more enlightened. You mentioned you're an entertainer, so tell us where we can find some more information about some of the work you're doing.
Yeah, so I spend much too much time on Instagram, so you can find me on there most of the time at Chris Eli Black. Yes, usually where I post things, or you can just Google my name and something will probably pop up, hopefully good things.
Okay. Well, Chris, once again, thank you guys. Thank you so much for showing up here on Unsensitive and dealing with the hot seat and, some of these, really tough questions that I think were important to ask and important to get answered. So thank you so much. And once again, a challenge to all of the listeners out there, if you have a topic that you know a little bit about that can be seen maybe as a little bit controversial and you want to cover that, reach out to me through the Fearscape Media Network, as well as my email through the Facebook page, and we'll see if we can get a session going. But in the meantime, thank you for listening to Unsensitive, and until the next time, keep that mind open.